Welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, your headquarters for building a six-figure plus e-commerce business. I'm your host, e-commerce entrepreneur, and Jeff Bezos wannabe, Andrew Derry. Hey guys, it's Andrew here, and welcome to episode number 16. Today, I've got E-Commerce Fuel private forum member Justin Winter from DiamondCandles.com with one of, or if not the most impressive e-commerce stories that I've heard recently, of growing a business to $1 million in revenue within 1 year and closing in on the 20 million mark within 3 years, all with a pretty modest amount of startup capital and all through either organic or social media without a whole lot of paid advertising. It's really impressive. So looking forward to diving into the nuts and bolts of that story. But first, got to do a first sale shout out to Leighton Taylor, who writes in and says, "Just launched my new site, survivalknifeexperts.com, and made my first sale the same day of launch from Facebook. Right now, I'm going through your videos on marketing in the Insider's Guide, and we'll be ramping up the marketing plan in the next few weeks. Thanks for all the resources you've provided. They've been very helpful." Leighton, congratulations, man. First sale, first day. That's impressive. That's not what happened to me, as I've said many times. So excited to hear you're getting some early traction with that. And for those that may not have heard of Leighton, he also writes about and podcasts about e-commerce as well over at ecommercepulse.com. So definitely worth checking out. Personally, I'm just getting back from Bangkok, actually. Just got in last night and was attending the Dynamite Circle meetup. Dynamite Circle is a private kind of entrepreneurial group that Dan and Ian from over at TropicalMBA.com put together. And it was about 200 people, 200 location independent entrepreneurs, and some great speakers that all converged for a 2 or 3 day conference. I had a chance to meet up with Terry Lynn over at Build My Online Store. I've been wanting to do that for a while. I had some great street food with him and a good time. Was able to meet up for dinner with a number of private forum members here at the E-Commerce Fuel private forum. And that was fantastic, putting some faces to some names. Overall, had a great time in the city. And wanted to share just briefly, I could go on for a while on this, but just briefly, a few takeaways from some of the speakers at the event. Peter Shankman, he's the founder of Haro, Help a Reporter Out. And I definitely had heard of Haro, hadn't necessarily followed him as closely, but he's a really impressive guy. You can get more information on him over at shankman.com, and we'll link up to that. But one thing that he really impressed upon me was just focusing on how you really need to really take care of your customers and your community. One of his quotes, "Customer experience is the strongest currency." And it really has some implications for e-commerce, especially as Amazon's getting more and more powerful and more influential in the space, and we're seeing more competition from other people. That experience you have, that brand you have with your customers and in the marketplace is one of the few things that other people are not going to be able to rip off. And so just how incredibly important that is. John Myers is a designer, a well-known designer, and one of the quotes I took away from him, "Design with no economic value is simply vanity. You have to consider the utility." And, this is something that rings true for me because, again, if you followed me for a while, with trollingmotors.net, one of my stores, right out of the gates when I launched, I dumped $5,000 into this custom, beautiful design without any thought to how my customers actually needed to use the site, what was important to them. And it was just window dressing, and I had to ultimately tear the whole design down. And so that really resonated with me. After that, I maybe swung too much to the other side of the pendulum, saying design isn't that important. You can run a great e-commerce store with a crappy, terrible design. He also talked about design really is conveying the message and the brand that you want. And so it gave me a good middle ground perspective again, that you really do need to emphasize that usability, but you also need to use it to emphasize the brand and your message, because if you have a crappy design, again, you're going to send a bad message about your company. Peter Keller, worked for, I think, Living Social for a while, and he's the founder of FringeSport.com, where they make and sell CrossFit equipment. And I think he had the most open and honest talk of the entire presentation. He shared some of the struggles he's had. He shared some issues he had with family partnerships in terms of running the business. Had a lot of great insights into e-commerce, but I think even more importantly, what I took away from his talk was it reminded me of what makes really good content. And that's being open, being honest, and being vulnerable and transparent, and giving people a window into not just like, oh, hey, business is great, things are good, I don't have any problems, but really showing people the nitty-gritty, the ups and downs of business. And that was really impressive. So it's good inspiration for me here on the podcast, on the blog, and in the future for whatever content I'm sharing to be as transparent as possible. So we'll have to get Peter on the podcast, an incredible story, and would love to share it with you. And finally, James Schramko from superfastbusiness.com spoke. And one of the concepts that really stuck out to me was, if you want more money and authority, you have to take on more responsibility. And this isn't a groundbreaking concept, but it was one that was really helpful for me to think about and kind of come front of mind as I'm thinking through my business. Currently, right now, I'm at a point in my business where I kind of have to make a decision. I either need to get very comfortable with the fact that I've got a great lifestyle business, one that, and I've talked about this before, ones that does about $1 million, it'll do about $1.5 million in revenue this year. Again, that's revenue, not like profits. But be very comfortable with that. Or if I want to grow something bigger, grow something much larger, I really need to go through and invest in people, invest in a lot of systems, and make a very concerted effort to build up that business. And it's something where there's a great book called No Man's Land that talks about, if you want to bridge the gap from being a kind of a business in that low millions range to really building something in the 10, 20, 30, 50 plus millions of dollars, you've got to be very aggressive in hiring. And it takes a push, a proactive push that's pretty intense. And so really thinking through if that's something that I want to do or not. Looking at like work-life balance. I know a lot of people hate that term, but I think it's important. And maybe the term isn't greatest, but I think the concept is valuable. I love what I do passionately. I really enjoy it. But at the same time, it's not something I'm willing to spend, 16, 18 hours a day working 7 days a week for the next 2 years on at the expense of my health and my family and other people. And also, why would I want to grow a business much bigger? If I want to go from $1 million up to 10 million, why would I want to do that? Would it be because I enjoy the experience and enjoy growing something and making something from nothing and watching it develop? Well, I think that's a good reason. If it's because I want to try to make a bunch more money, I think that's a pretty bad reason. If I can't be happy making what I am now, there's no way I'm going to be happy making, 3, 4, 5x what I'm making now. And I think that holds true for most people. And so just really thinking through those issues is something I've been doing. So kind of at a crossroads right now, obviously, trying to figure that out, and going to be making an announcement in the next couple weeks, a pretty big announcement regarding the businesses that I have. And so something I've been thinking a lot about and excited to share with you guys. So we'll do that when the time is right. So with that little open heart confessional session done with, let's dive into today's interview with Justin Winter. Today, I've got Justin Winter from DiamondCandles.com. Justin, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, no, glad to be here. Been excited to chat with you.
So you've got such a cool story of incredible growth in a short period of time. And for those that don't know, Diamond Candles, you sell premium soy candles. Each one has a ring inside worth anywhere from $10 up to $5,000. And so that's kind of the premise. We'll get into that a little bit more. But in terms of revenues, what are you guys doing in terms of revenues right now?
So right now, we're looking at here for the end of the calendar year 2013. We'll be closing between kind of 16 and approximately 18, 19 or so for calendar year 2013 is what we're looking at right now.
16 million.
Yes. Okay. Yes. With an M. Yeah.
Okay. And how long have you been in business?
So we started, sold our first candle on Valentine's Day 2011. So we're sitting here at about 2 years, 2¾ years. So getting close on 3 years this Valentine's Day here in about 3 months, 3-4 months.
So this will be your third full year of business, or at least your calendar year of business, and you're going to do 19 million in 3 years.
Right. Yep. Uh-huh.
That's madness.
It is madness. Yes, it is.
And so what's been the growth trajectory for that? First year, second year, third year, how quickly is that ramped up?
Yeah, no, definitely. First full kind of open year, 12 months, we eclipsed the million mark about 3 weeks before. So it's kind of a nice storybook ending for that first 12 months. So from that, it's been relatively consistent month over month growth.
Where did you get connected with, because you're a co-founder, where did you get originally connected with your co-founders?
So, kind of a random set of circumstances, even back in college. So kind of internet marketing, SEO, and, web design was an intriguing thing for me. So going into all of this, had always part-time you know, done a lot of outside learning, internet marketing and stuff like that. I probably, you know, was on every make money from home website and pyramid scheme out there, you know, looking at landing pages and how they did things. You know, thankfully, after tuition, I was pretty broke, so I never spent any money on much of any of that stuff, but was able to do a lot of learning. Even the whole like MLM market, I was super intrigued by a lot of those companies. Never was involved, but just looking about how they do things, seeing successful people versus not successful people, the marketing strategies people use. Just love kind of surveying everything and kind of learning what I could by observation. So had done some kind of started to do some part-time kind of web design stuff, marketing stuff, really just for local small businesses and things like that, even in the middle of college there. And just so happened, so David and Brenda have a construction company, a concrete company, and had connected with them. And I came on to help out primarily with the website to help drive more leads and to even do a little bit in kind of a one-to-one face-to-face kind of sales capacity. So the when that company still exists and that is still running, and they do B2C and B2B for concrete is kind of the specialty there in the Raleigh-Durham Triangle area here in RTP, North Carolina. So that was originally the connection. And as part of that relationship, you know, obviously David shared in the idea and the story. He has had this idea for forever, hadn't done anything with it right. And, you know, obviously from there, it's like, okay, well, let's try it out. Who knows? So that's where it went from.
So with your co-founders, you know, they owned a construction company that had experience in that, but where specifically did you meet them? Was it a family friend?
It was Craigslist, actually.
Craigslist,
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did they need help with their business, or what was it? Did they have an ad going, or you put an ad out on Craigslist?
No, they had the ad going for kind of marketing and sales, and I had responded to it, was kind of perpetually online, you know, on Craigslist, looking at different things and saw that and connected and went from there.
And so you connect with these guys and you start helping them with their website. And what's the story? I know the story, but I'd love to hear you tell it. You know, how did the story of the whole candles and the ring thing pop up? What was David and Brenda's story on that?
So the context around that with the concrete company in construction, the industry certainly was down, you know, around that time. So kind of in that downtime when there's not a lot of work going around and not a lot of jobs, or, you know, big, you know, improvement projects on websites, or, you know, looking to increase leads. David was excited about, hey, in that spare time, you know, let's figure out something else to do to make some money, you know. And we would talk about lots of different ideas, you know, but this one stuck with, hey, we got to try this. Hey, we got to try this. So kind of in that downtime around everything, it's like, okay, let's, you know, let's kind of start this new little project and see what we can do.
And how long had you been working with them when you guys partnered up on this and became co-founders?
Really not too long. Really just, I said, I don't even know exactly offhand, you know, it wouldn't have been more than maybe 4 months, maybe less.
Any fear in having a co-founder? I got to be honest with you. I'm scared to death of bringing a co-founder on because I'm kind of a control freak. And you know, so here you are, you've met these people about 4 months ago and you end up going into business with them. Was that hard? Was that scary? Did you have any reservations about that? Obviously it's worked out well, but.
Probably, I'm trying to think back if I did. I mean, honestly, I don't really think I did. I mean, I think there was there were synergistic skill sets there that were very complementary. You know, I obviously don't have any manufacturing background at all, and concrete isn't exactly manufacturing. It's about as close as you can get. Pouring concrete, pouring candles, it's kind of close, right? So yeah, no, so definitely didn't have any reservations on that element. And, you know, if anything, you know, we were just excited for the further we went down and as we got ready to kind of present this to the world, so to speak, you know, we just got more and more excited about the future and the potential. And obviously, as soon as we had it up and we started selling them, it was over. We're set. You know, we're like, okay, let's do this. You know,
had either you or your co-founders had any experience making candles before ever in your life?
Yeah, I definitely haven't. No, and I don't think they had either.
That's amazing. Can you walk us through how did that go? So you get the idea, or your co-founder did. You get on board. You guys kind of come in together. What was the process like from when you decided to move forward to when you had that first day of sales? Can you walk us through that process?
Yeah. So, you know, kind of the hit list was, well, goodness, what are we going to call this, right? You know, what's going to kind of be that one-liner? Diamond candles are ringing every candle, right? You know, what are the ring values? And then really from there, it was, well, I guess we're going to have to get a logo. I guess that makes sense, right? And so, and then kind of some label designs and, you know, what are going to be, you know, how many products are we going to start with? Hey, let's just do five, keep it simple, get labels for the five of them. You know, how are we going to get the labels? I'm not a graphic designer. We're not going to try and do that. So, I mean, that was really really the majority of it is just working kind of through the creative elements on the brand building and kind of honing that value statement was really easily 60 or 70% of that build up time. Because then once we had, you know, those final kind of elements there, we don't anymore. But at the time, you know, even the product photos weren't real photos. They were superimposed graphic recreations. So we didn't even have to take product photography that the designer, he could use. And I'm reading the Adobe Suite product that, you know, make stuff look 3D like that, like products and everything, but had done all that. And, you know, in the meantime, we were practicing our candles and getting the colors that we wanted and kind of experimenting, doing a lot of learning really quickly. You know, kind of the best way to make the most quality product that we could. Definitely, there's a lot of Google searching involved with all of this. You know, Google was our teacher. And then, you know, finding people who had experience and then, you know, talking with them and helping them, you know, from them helping us get from, you know, point A to point B faster than even Google can take us, you know, relying on that expertise. So
how long was that period between when you first decided, hey, we're going to do this, and when you got the website up for that first sale?
I don't believe it was longer than 3 months.
So 3 months, and you're making these candles yourself in-house. So you've got all that stuff. You're doing all the production. I'm guessing the three of you were making all of these candles.
Yeah, actually, at that time, we had one person, once we started doing this, who kind of the first employee, so to speak, was one person, and they made candles full time. And that was kind of what we did to start.
And so you know, 3 months, that's pretty impressive scale of time. Did you build the website, the first website?
Yes and no. Shopify did. I bought a prepaid theme on Shopify for $100. And then like literally the customization was I uploaded a logo. That was it.
I love it. Yeah. Man, talk about like bootstrapping something up easy. And a lot of times that's all you need to test something out. I mean, I think people get really overwhelmed with, oh, I have to have this amazing, beautiful custom design site, and it's got to be, you know, no one else on the whole internet can have anything like mine.
Yeah.
Forget it.
It's like at the end of the day, you know, if 100 other people on the internet are using that theme, well, if I didn't see it before now, there's a good chance my target market probably hasn't either.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, 100% agree. I mean, all of my sites, all my e-commerce sites, all use a stock Magento theme. Like, it ships with the shopping cart. You know, it does not get more generic than that. And I mean, we've tweaked it a little bit, but cleaned it up, tweaked it, slapped our logo on it, had a little bit of custom stuff. But for the most part, yeah, it's out there on pretty much. If you've got Magento, you've got it. So that first day, and I want to walk through kind of your first 18 months. Your first day, you sold 12 candles, which I know in the past you said we've only sold 12 candles. I think 12 candles on the first day is pretty impressive compared to a lot of, at least my first day. So within 12 months, you were selling 10,000 candles, probably, I'm guessing, roughly at about, you know, a $3 million run rate per month. And then within 18 months, you're selling 12 million candles. And of course, now $12 million in candles on a run rate, on a monthly run, annual run rate. And then now, of course, you're going to be doing probably 19 million this year. And so incredible growth. I'd love to walk through just those different steps. That first day with 12 candles, how were you getting those sales? Was it paid marketing? Was it word of mouth? What did you use to drive that traffic?
Leading up to that, really, we spent almost as much time on leading up to the launch as we did on a lot of other things that we were doing at the time. So, I mean, the formula was kind of a Facebook sweepstakes product launch. So, you know, we knew that, hey, between all of our number of like Facebook friends we personally had, at the end of the day, let's more or less spam everyone and send them a message, say, hey guys, we're doing this cool thing we're starting. Like, go like the page and enter this sweepstakes. We're giving away, I think it was a 2-night, 3-day stay at a beach house for the weekend. We knew that of the people we're messaging and everything, because our market was so large, that, you know, it certainly wasn't the most targeted promotion ever, but let's just see how many people we get to sign up for this thing. And we had used, you know, a tool at that time. I think the contest really only ran for about 2 weeks leading up to, you know, the end of the contest, which is when we, that first day when we sold the products. And I believe it was either 2,200 or 2,500 sweepstakes entrants is what we were able to pull together in that time. So really, we imported that list into MailChimp and then emailed out and said, hey, you know, and the winner is, you know, dot, dot, dot. And then, hey, you know, most likely it's not you, but hey, we started Diamond Candles. It's got a ring and a candle. Go buy one and let us know what you think on Facebook.
So it was a sweepstakes. Did you even mention the candles with the sweepstakes?
Yeah. So we did. We ran the sweepstakes on the Diamond Candles page.
Okay.
Yeah. So we kind of, I believe, probably speculating here, my memory probably isn't serving me right, but I believe, you know, we had something kind of on that sign up form area that's like, hey, we're Diamond Candles. We're launching soon. This is kind of our thing before that. And hey, there's going to be a real ring in every candle. So sign up for this and we'll give you this completely unrelated prize to our product offering. Yeah, that was really it.
A year in that 12th month, you were doing 10,000 orders per month, which is just a stratospheric difference. So, I mean, my big question is, how in the world did you market this business to go from 12 per day to 10,000 per month in 12 months? Specifically, like, were you doing paid advertising? Was it social media? What were you guys doing?
We didn't spend any money on any paid advertising that entire first 12 months. So it definitely wasn't that. Really, I think what we can fully attribute it to is, you know, in kind of the in-the-vogue term of kind of growth hacker, you know, really, and I think, you know, and there's lots of definitions, but everything is marketing. I think is a good synopsis there. So really the you know, marketing was part of our thinking in the product development phase from the back label with the instructions we gave people and the call to action to go to our Facebook page and post their photo and share and see what other people are finding inside of theirs, inside of their candles. So in all the time we spent, particularly early on Facebook, every single day, the hours and hours, we quickly figured out that really, people loved the experience and the anticipation and the excitement of what we've now dubbed kind of this ring reveal experience. And that was really the true excitement and selling point for people. So we said, hey, you know, how can we best capture that excitement that people are having and get people to share that within their networks? Because that's going to sell better than us having, you know, a web page that says, hey, this is fun. So when we really figured out that that's really the core value proposition that most differentiates us, we said, you know, okay, how can we set things up so we're systematically encouraging people to capture this moment, whether that's in video format or in photos, and how can we incentivize people to spread, you know, this idea virus, you know, so to speak, right? That this exciting element. And I think figuring that out, the constant sweepstakes and promotions that we're calling for people to do that and share that, it created kind of a product experience culture that that's just what you did with them. You know, so you took a picture and you shared it with people. You went back to the Facebook page every day to see what rings people got today because it's fun. And hey, I love, you know, people love jewelry. So figuring that out kind of was that foundation.
That's amazing. And so you obviously, there's a huge viral aspect to this, like you just described. But that wasn't an accident. That wasn't something that just kind of happened by happenstance. You intentionally, before you launched, you kind of saw the possibility with that and preemptively really stressed that for people. That's amazing. I feel obviously your product lends itself so incredibly well to this kind of thing, but I feel like there's tons of merchants who maybe not something, don't have an experience as well as you've created and something that is fun as fun to share. But I feel like a lot of people really try to do this. Hey, post our picture of, like for CB radios, for example, what I do, post your picture of, you know, your CB radio installation, which granted is not nearly as exciting probably as posting the $5,000 ring you pulled out of a candle. But were there other ways that you, there must have been other ways you incentivized people to dive in there to share their experience? Were you running contests? Were you saying, hey, you know, for all the people who share their experience today, we're going to give away a free candle for a month for the next year. What were you doing to really juice that fire? Because there must have been something.
Yeah, no, I mean, so we definitely were incentivizing beyond just asking. So, I mean, one of the primary ways we did that was we had a post-purchase refer a friend campaign. We used and still use Qurebit, Qurebit.com as our social kind of referral platform. At the time, you know, they had an integration with Shopify, and while we're not on Shopify anymore, we still work with them, and they power all of our kind of our custom links that give people that offer. Hey, you know, get $5 in, you know, diamond candles, bucks for everyone that clicks on this links and, you know, and makes a purchase. So we had that going, and our participation rate on that compared to other retailers was kind of abnormally high as well, which kind of lends itself to the channel. People were coming from Facebook. So when you ask people to share on Facebook after they heard about it on Facebook, obviously there's a kind of a higher level of relevance there than if someone's coming from a PPC ad or something. So that was really huge. And then certainly, you know, we were always doing contests and giveaways and sweepstakes where, you know, we would incentivize people, hey, you know, make a video and the first 10 people who do it and post it on the Facebook page, we'll reimburse you your most recent order, or, you know, we'll give you store credit, or we'll send you the newest candle. You'll get a free candle. Or experimented with lots of different levels of, you know, incentives. So we could kind of find that perfect mix between incentivizing people, but obviously not giving away the farm over time. But certainly initially, you know, we really didn't care about making money on those orders day one. You know, we wanted to get tons of reviews for each and every product, tons of photos on Facebook to kind of prime the pump, so to speak, to get that moving and kind of set that culture and that expectation with people who are going to come after.
It's incredible what you've done. 500,000 fans on Facebook, 25,000 Twitter followers. I was looking on your Facebook feed and there'd be posts like, hey, we've got this brand new orange pumpkin spice candle. You know, who's interested in one? And there's like 1,500 likes on it. It's crazy. So that first 12 months, again, $10,000 or 10,000 orders per month, that's got to be expensive. You're growing so rapidly. You've got a bunch of materials you got to purchase. And this isn't like a dropship based model. You've got to have these ready to go before the orders come in and you're trying to anticipate and keep up with demand. And I'm imagining this was just taking, this is not going to be cheap. So how are you financing this growth?
Slowly, a little bit at a time. One of the big ways we helped ourselves out is, we only had 5 SKUs. So obviously, currently now even still we only have one size product, and that's going to be changing, pretty soon. But we made it easier for us, kind of in the purchasing department there, with just having one size jar as an example, one size wick. And we only introduced, when we started, we only had 5 product options. So that's 5 colors that we're buying, and 5 fragrances and 5 different types of labels. So that was a huge way that we're able to minimize working capital needs for kind of raw materials inventory. So, at that time, every 3 or 4 months, we would come out with about 5 new products. So at the end of that first year, minus what we had pulled off that was seasonal, we had probably introduced maybe 25 fragrances by then. So that, was a huge factor there.
So it was all bootstrapped. So you're saying from the beginning, kind of initial capital infusion that you and your co-founders put in, you never had to take additional funding or financing or anything like that?
Correct. Yes. So we have never to date taken any outside capital of any form, whether angel investors, venture capital, or any type of loan.
Was it a pretty substantial amount that you invested right out of the gates, or was it a pretty lean initial kind of sum that you started with?
I guess at the end of the day, it's all relative, but pretty lean. Over the course of those first few months, definitely don't quote me here. But I think, it wouldn't have been more than $20,000 or $30,000 maybe.
It's amazing you're able to bootstrap that. So it's amazing you've had so much growth, but yet you're able to, you always hear horror stories about people being victims of their own growth and it just comes in and they don't have the cash to fill stuff in. It's impressive you've been able to do it like that. What kind of growing pains did you have, growing that quickly in 12 months? You must have... were you working like 16-hour, 18-hour days? Were you cycling through people to help out, keep up demand? What were some of those huge problems you had to overcome in the first 12 months as you were just ramping up incredibly quickly?
Yeah, and definitely a lot, certainly in the first 12 months. And obviously, even now, we're still on a pretty heady trajectory, and there's new stuff around the curve all the time. But the first real big one was fulfillment and shipping to customers. So when we started, obviously we had the local post office rep and his little itty bitty truck come by every day, and we'd toss candles in the back. Like, that's what we did. And we were paying quote unquote the business rate, which was like 10% less than what you'd pay retail if you just walked in to ship something to grandma. So, and at the time, and kind of the problem with our product is, or kind of part of the equation was, retail price point relative to weight, that ratio is extremely high. So, 3 pounds for this candle, you're charging $25 for. A $2,000 MacBook weighs less than that, right? And your shipping costs would be less. So, early on, we were just passing on the rate price to customers, depending on where they were, that was factoring in differently depending if they're in California or if they were 5 minutes down the road. So people in California in the early days, and people actually pay this, but they're paying $15 to ship a $25 product to California where they lived. But fulfillment scaling problems, and then we quickly realized, hey, let's outsource fulfillment to a fulfillment company, and obviously, one of the best decisions we've ever made, and our costs are significantly lower. We've been through a few transitions there with who we're using for that, but that was the really big growing pain.
Who are you guys using right now? Are you using one of the big boys like Shipwire or FBA?
No, we actually started out with FBA and used them when they were first kind of beta testing their white label option to where it didn't have any Amazon branding. Mm-hmm. But kind of we ran into some things there, just kind of wasn't the optimal set up for us as we were growing with everything. And we're actually now over with Symphony Commerce. I don't know if you've run into them yet, but they're only newer out of the gate, but it's kind of a halfway between a lower a hosted e-commerce solution and like big on the, you know, on the upper end of things like a GSI Commerce or Demandware or something like that. So they actually, it's platform and fulfillment and customer service all under one roof.
And actually that I meant to come back to that for that shipping, that's crazy. You know, $25 people paying. So it sounded like in the early days you did have people paying that $15, but is that what you're doing now? Are you still charging people for shipping? And if not, how are you able to, do you just eat it? How did you end up solving that problem?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, we knew it was killing conversion rate, right? You know, with, hey, buy one candle and pay $12. Like, it wasn't the rockets.
Yeah. Pay 50% in shipping fees.
yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we knew that, you know, obviously at that time with our cost structure, we weren't in a position to offer people like $5 and for us to eat like $10 plus on it. Like that, you know, we wouldn't be open for very long if we did that. So once we were able to move to FBA, hugely, you know, saved costs there because, you know, and with them, it was flat rate anywhere. So it was really easy to kind of calculate back and napkin math there. And because we only have one product and one weight and one price point, you know, it makes the math, you know, really, really easy. So at that point, we moved to a tiered pricing where if you buy one, it's X. If it's two, it's X. Three, it's X. Four, it's X. Well, I keep saying X, X, Y, Z. You know what I mean? And then five plus is the same. So kind of a tiered pricing. So on the lower level, we're out just a little bit, but we're kind of able to hit kind of a really nice appealing price point on shipping. But then for some of the higher levels, it was break even or make a little bit of margin just to help cover things.
Yeah. With the premium candle, you know, it sounds like your shipping costs came down pretty substantially, say $12. I'm guessing with FBA, you're probably able to ship them out for, I'm guessing what, $5, $4, $5, $6 a pop.
Regrettably not down to four, but I mean, I think, but yeah, a little bit on the higher end of the numbers you just gave, you know, all things being told, but you know, in some cases, I mean, it was 50% of what was before for sure.
Justin, you know, 19 million in sales in 3 years. Incredible story. Excited to see what you're able to do in the next couple of years, years four and five. So again, diamondcandles.com. Make sure to check them out. Really, really great product and an incredible story. So thanks for taking the time to talk. It's been great hearing the journey.
Yep. No, thank you, Andrew. It's been a pleasure.
That's going to do it for this week, but if you'd like to build your own successful store, make sure to download my free ebook on niche selection, finding wholesalers, and getting your own store off the ground at ecommercefuel.com/ebook. And if you've already got some experience under your belt, you'll want to consider the eCommerce Fuel Private Forums, a vetted private community reserved for established store owners and professionals. You can learn more and apply for membership via the form tab at ecommercefuel.com. So this week, it's the end of the 2-week period to enter a iTunes review for one lucky person to win a beautiful leather wallet from whippingpost.com. I've actually had this the last week or two and really enjoyed rolling around with it. So much classier than the binder clip I was using. This isn't a joke. I was using this ghetto old binder clip to keep my cash and cards together. But this week, the winner, picked randomly from all the countries that left reviews, is Brad Sun from the United States. So Brad, thank you so much. Congratulations. And please get in touch with me at ecommercefuel.com/contact, and we'll make sure to get you hooked up with them. And for everyone else who left a review, thank you so much. It's really appreciated. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you again next Friday.